All week, Brent has been in Ecuador. Last week, he mentioned that he would be teaching at a seminary from the book of Corinthians. I don't know that he told you he was going to be in Ecuador teaching through the book of Corinthians. And he got back on the red-eye flight this weekend. So needless to say, he is resting and recouping from that trip. So we're going to continue our series, Rhythms. Rhythms of a Heart After God. And here's the idea that we've been kind of trying to construct. David, the Bible says in the book of Acts, that David was a man after God's heart. He was a man after God's own heart. That God said that about him. Think about that for a moment. That God would say of you, you are a man or a woman after my heart. In other words, your life beats to the rhythms of the heart of God. What a way of looking at it. And here's the thing with David. We look and we live in this world where everything is about kind of three steps to this or five steps to this. And if you do this, this will happen. That's not what this series is about. This series is about causing and trying to get our life in rhythm where it's just a part of us. We talked last week about a hopeful heart after God. Not to sometimes be hopeful, but to have a hopeful heart. That no matter what's going on around us, we have a hopeful heart after God. Talked a few weeks ago about a fearful heart after God. David, with his back against the wall, manages to step out from the wall and remember who God is, even though Saul is after him. It is a part. It is a part of the fabric of his being for David. And so the question we have to ask ourselves every week of the series, is this a rhythm of my heart? And so here we have in Psalm 139, and many of you are probably familiar with this psalm, or at least pieces of this psalm. It is very well known. And in this psalm, it talks about God knowing us. And here's the temptation. The temptation is to go, I know God knows me. But I see that as kind of a vacation Bible school level of God knowing us. Of answering the question that if I were to ask, does God know you? Yes, he knows me. Ding, 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 you get a piece of candy. No, I'm talking about a deep understanding that God knows everything about me to the point that it changes the rhythms of my heart. And so in this particular psalm, we're going to watch David start with kind of that vacation Bible school answer. And then he starts to dive deeper and deeper and deeper into this idea of God knowing us. And then he comes out on the other side going, wow, I've got to change some of my rhythms for this. So here's what we're going to do. First, we're going to just read through the entire psalm. We're going to hit a couple things to kind of bring some things to your attention, some things you may have never noticed before. And then after we do that, we are going to break down, and I just mentioned how we don't have, this isn't about four steps, but I have four principles or characteristics or steps to an authentic heart. And I'm always hesitant to do that because I am not the kind of person that goes, oh, if I just do this, I'm done. And when it comes to the Psalms are not at all that way. The Psalms are all about this song, this poetry that gets under your skin and messes with you. It's not, let's just check off four things and go and try to work on that. So please understand that I am not proposing that we do that today. But I do have, and I think it comes right out of this passage, four things that we need to be analyzing and meditating on, that David shows us that if these four things are at work, we can begin to reach an authentic heart, the kind of authentic heart that David is describing in this passage. So that's what we're going to do this morning. And so let's begin by reading through this psalm. Psalm 139. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. Notice he says, you have searched me, which means it has already been done. You know when I sit down and when I rise. In other words, you know my passive state. You know when I'm not up to anything, and you know when I get up to go and work and go and live and go and get involved in life. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. There you go again. He begins to describe what it means to know his sitting and his rising. You know when I am lying down. You know when the whole world is quiet around me. You are still watching. But you also know when I get up in the morning and I get ready for work and I head out the door, you know me in that state as well. Even before a word is on my tongue. The actual Hebrew, the word is more like not just a word, but a declaration. You know when a declaration, when a word, you know when I'm thinking and about to talk about things that matter to me. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, oh Lord, you know it all together. And I think about this, and I think about marriages, and I think about the idea of communication. And it always seems to come down to, you are not listening to me. And here's David saying to God, we say to our wife or we say to our husband, are you listening? And then, if you're like me, sometimes you're guilty of repeating back two or three words, but you really weren't listening as well as you should. I just admitted that. That's not good. But here's what David's saying. Before that thing that is important to me is even on my tongue, you already know it. Think about that. David's saying to God, you listen to me before I even say it. It's beautiful. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. I want to point to the word hem here. This word, when you look at the Hebrew, comes from almost a military type word of besiege. You besiege me. It's not as simple as you're just in front of me and behind me. You have kind of cranked down on me. And here's David. He is a poet, but he is also a general. He is also a warrior, and he understands military situations. And so he is saying to God, you have me. You have me on all sides. No matter what direction I turn in, you are there. You lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. In the Hebrew, too wonderful for me shows up marvelous, marvelous. He says it twice. He puts emphasis on it. He's saying, your ways, they're marvelous. Such knowledge is marvelous. It is beyond my ability to comprehend. And that's when he says here, he says, I cannot attain it. And we find another word that could be used in a military sense. This idea of what you're up to and what and how you do things, God, is so ironclad. It is so done. It is so steady that I can't break into it. I can't do anything with it. Basically, I have to surrender because you have besieged me, and I can't even grasp the level of this grip you have. And then we see a little bit of a turn. He's still saying great things, but I'd never noticed this until I studied this passage. There's a little bit of a turn. So basically, here he is going, like when we are in battle and we besiege another army and we've got them in our grips to the point that they are done. To use the MMA word, there's a submission hole and you have to tap out. That is where I'm at with God. And so then he's going, oh my goodness, I don't know about this. I mean, come to think of it, I can't get away from you. Even if I tried, where can I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee? There it is again, flee from your presence. It's the kind of like a military trying to run away. I can't go anywhere because you've got me. And you know what? This may not always be good for me. If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. Basically, if I go to the heights, the parts that we can just stand and marvel at and say, wow, how beautiful that is. If I'm in that place, you're there. And if I'm in the place that we don't even want to talk about, he's not necessarily talking about the hell that we see in the New Testament here. We're not going to get into all of that. But he's talking about the depths that no one wants to be and no one wants to go and no one wants to end up. So you might as well say it can be hell. Because what he's saying is, even if I'm in the worst place, you're still there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me. Here's what I imagine. I imagine him standing on the shore, and he's looking out over the ocean. You've all seen a sunrise over the ocean or a sunset, but it's really more impressive to go with this, with the sunrise, that when the sun rises and the beams just shoot out in all directions. It's like he's standing here, and I don't know if this is what's happening, but I imagine him pinning these words as he watches the sun rise over the sea, and he's going, wow, if I could be that light, and if I could just fly out over the ocean the way the sun does, it doesn't matter where I go, you're there before I get there. That's poetry, but it's still cool. This idea that he's getting kind of fancy with us, but he's trying to make the point that it doesn't matter. If I travel at the speed of light, you're already there. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light about me be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day. For darkness is as light to you. So he's going, and again, I imagine him going, oh my goodness, I cannot get away from you. Even in the dark times of life, even in the parts of my life that I don't want to talk about, even the parts of my life that I don't want to show to anybody else, even the parts of my life that I want to run from, you are there. And even those things are not dark to you. For you formed me, and he comes back, and now he brings it back to going, okay, let's talk about why. Why is God like this, and how is God like this? Let's talk about what he's done with us, and let's stop looking out over the sea, and let's look at ourselves and what he has done with us. For you formed my inward parts. I want to point out here, if you look at the Hebrew, it says, you possess my kidneys. That's more the literal. Many of you may know John Kennedy. He had an injury this past week. He's part of our church. He had an injury this past week, and it was an injury to his kidneys. And I'll come back and I'll talk about this in a minute, but I was reading this the other day, and I texted him. And I said, John, I don't think this is quite what David meant, but I'm looking at this passage in 139, and it's telling me that God possesses our kidneys. John, he has you. And a little bit later, I get a text back from his wife saying, well, I guess he does have him because he's going home. So he went home that day. God has us. And I'll explain in a few minutes what I think David means by that phrase, he possesses our kidneys. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Listen to that language. Those of you who sew and knit, you know the intricacies that go along with that, the beauty and the art that goes along with that. And he's using that to describe what God does with us. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you. I said that part. Intricately woven in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them. The days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. How precious to me are your thoughts. Oh God, how vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they would be, they are more than the sand. I awake and I am still with you. And then I want to pause, because all of a sudden, there's a huge transition that takes place here. I mean, up until this point, I imagine James Taylor, how sweet it is to be loved by you. Then all of a sudden, enter Sandman, Metallica. And the whole thing takes on a different form. It's kind of like this whole Super Bowl Odd Couples that you've seen with the halftime shows, where they take and they mesh two, like last year, Red Hot Chili Peppers and Bruno Mars. That's weird. And so right here, that's kind of what I see. It's this kind of change. And so check this out. And I'm not gonna read this in Metallica voice. But listen to this. All of a sudden, I mean, it's just like, how sweet it is to be. I'm not gonna sing. Okay. And so then it gets to this, and it goes, oh, that you would slay the wicked, oh God. Have you ever noticed this? Probably not. You might not even know this was in Psalm 139, because a lot of times people just leave it out when they talk about this beautiful James Taylor of a chapter. Oh, men of blood, depart from me. They speak against you with malice intent. Your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with complete hatred. I count them my enemies. Now, a lot has been written about this. We're not going to get bogged down by it. But it does remind me of a story out of the book of Luke. Luke chapter 9, you can look at it later. I think it's about Luke chapter 9, right around verse 50. There's a story in the book of Luke where something similar to this is happening with the disciples and Jesus. So here's David, and David is like thinking about how awesome God is, and then he starts thinking about those who would rise up against God, and he's like, oh man, let's take them down. And so he puts that in there, and he goes, Metallica on us. And we see that in the book of Luke chapter 9, these guys that got the name, speaking, this is a great name for a heavy metal band, Sons of Thunder. And so here's what's happening. They're getting ready to go into Samaria in Luke chapter 9. And if you know anything about Samaria, a lot of Jews thought of them as the enemy. I think about last night with Alabama going down to LSU. Sorry, Kurt. But I think about Alabama going down to LSU. And that's probably about how they felt when they walked in, like going into Samaria. It's like, man, I don't like this place. But Jesus is like, we're packing up and that's where we're going. Because see, Jesus, the rules are different when he's with us. You know, he says, bless your enemies, pray for your enemies. And that's what we need to notice in this passage. And so they're about to go in, and they get rejected going into Samaria. They get rejected. And so his disciples look at Jesus and go, hey, you want us to pray fire down and consume them? That sounds a lot like David, doesn't it? Here they are, they feel this, they have this rage. And their rage, they feel, is justified. Because their rage is attached to God. And Jesus rejects, he rebukes them in that moment. And so see, I think what Jesus might say to us in this passage is, hey, I've given you a new set of standards. Something that David didn't have at that time. And some might would say, is David coming before God and going, based on your knowledge of me, this is what I think I know about you, and this is what I think you would say, and I'm just going to say it for you. And then it comes out of his mouth, and he's like, man. Now, again, and I'm just reading this and going, maybe this is what's happened. There's no conclusive evidence, but as you see it track out, it's almost like David's going, yeah, let's take them down. And then it's like he steps back and it gets to verse 22 or 23, and he goes, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't be thinking that way. And at that point, he concludes and he comes back and says, this is how I feel. This is how I feel when I think about who you are, when I think about your knowledge of us. Here's what I think about those who would rise up against who you are. They make me mad. And finally, and you know what? David is being very authentic with God in these passages. He's saying things that maybe everybody else is thinking, but they don't want to say. And so he comes back and he takes that and he puts it before God. And you notice the passage opens with, "You have searched me." So God, he knows God has already searched him. But then he says this in verse 23, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." So he comes back to the place he started from. And in the beginning, there is this knowledge, this vacation Bible school, "Yes, God knows me." Now he's going, "I know that you know me, and I want to be a part of that. So now I'm not just concluding that you know me, now I'm asking you to know me and to search me." And he gets to this place of authenticity. So four things, four principles that I see here, four keys, four whatever you want to call them. You can call them whatever you want to, but there's four that I have here. And the first one, and you see it in verse 1, you recognize the truth. You have to start to authenticity by recognizing the truth. In this passage, what does he say? He says, "You have searched me and you have known me." The word "search," you actually see the same word for the word "search" show up in the book of Job. And Job chapter 28, verse 3, the same word shows up. And in Job, it is not talking about investigating. You know what it's talking about in Job? It is talking about mining for like precious stones. And so basically, you could almost say that David is going, "God, you dig me." And maybe that's where the phrase came from. I don't think so, but who knows? And so David is saying, "God, it's not just you have searched me, but you have dug and you have penetrated past all the stuff in my life, and you have gotten deep down, and you are there, and you are looking for something in me, and you are trying to know me in a way that nobody else on the face of the earth knows me." And so David is saying, "Wow, I've got to recognize this." And that word "recognize" is simply to know again. I've got to recognize again that this is who you are, that you know me in this way. I'm reminded of the story out of John chapter 1, the story where Jesus is calling his disciples, and he comes to Philip. And he's talking to Philip, and he's explaining some things to Philip, and Philip's going, "Man, this guy is awesome. I got to go tell my brother." And so Philip goes to tell his brother Nathanael. And when he gets to Nathanael, Nathanael looks at Philip, and he says, wait, where'd you say this guy was from? He's from Nazareth. Nathanael goes, "Dude, nothing good comes out of Nazareth. There is no way this guy's the Messiah." But he goes along anyway. And he gets to Jesus, and as he's coming to Jesus, Jesus looks at him. And I imagine Jesus having kind of one of those smirks on his face where it's just kind of like, "Here he comes." And what Jesus says is, "Here comes a true and authentic Israelite in whom there is no deceit." Nathanael looks at him, that same authentic, brash Nazareth comes out, and he's like, "You don't know me." To which Jesus says, "I saw you when you were under the fig tree." How cool is that? And it's so cool to see the characteristics of God in the Old Testament showing up in Jesus in the New Testament. But when I look at this story, I go, "Man, that is the way God sees us. He discerns our thoughts from afar." That here's Nathanael, he's not even around, and Jesus is already thinking about him. And he already sees past what no one else can see, and he sees the true character of Nathanael. And you know what? He sees our true character too. Sometimes you go, "Man, I always feel misunderstood." You are not misunderstood by God. He understands, and he gets you, and he digs you. Maybe not always in the way that you want him to, but he's digging. And so the first thing you've got to do is recognize the truth that he knows me, and kind of get out of your own head and go, Oh, my goodness. You know, maybe it's worry, maybe it's fear, maybe it's doubt, maybe it's anger, whatever it is. Take any kind of feeling you have and step back and go, God knows me. He knows what I'm thinking right now. He knows what I shouldn't be and should be and all this stuff. Let me just go back to that and let me recognize the truth. The second thing, you've got to realize the beauty. The word beauty is a collection of qualities. And that's exactly what David is doing in this passage. He has given us a collection of qualities about who God is and how God knows us. Realize the beauty. Here's the thing. I think about the world we live in, the culture we live in. At every stage, at every culture, there is always something to distract us away from the beauty of God and His creation. And I would argue that right now it's technology. I like Apple products. And you, if you've ever watched the videos, the Apple videos, right after the keynote conference thing that they do, they'll always kind of, they'll reveal everything, and then they'll show these videos. I was talking to Brent the other day. Brent probably likes Apple products more than I do. And we were talking, and he goes, hey, did you see that video on the iWatch? And I'm like, nah, I didn't. He goes, man, that thing's cool. And I'm like, man, I don't wear a watch. I don't want to wear a watch. Nobody wears a watch. He goes, yeah, but I saw the video. I want that. And then he went on to say, it's something they do with those videos, man. They make everything so cool. And everything is just your watch, and you're like, oh, yeah, I need that. A couple years ago when the iPhone 5 came out, I don't even know if I had an iPhone, but I was watching the video, and it was doing just that. And here's what was happening. I was watching this video on the iPhone 5, but you know what I got stuck on? The earbuds. And I'm watching this video, and this guy, you always got to speak in an English accent. That makes everything cooler. And so he's speaking in this British accent, and as he's speaking, he's talking about the contour of the new earbud and how it fits perfectly. It was designed for your ear. And I'm just watching this. I'm like, man, I got to get my hand on some of those earbuds. Those things are amazing. And I'm watching this thing. All the while, I am hearing sound come out of this computer with ears that far outweigh any design that Apple could ever give us. And I'm not thinking about that. Last week, my kids were studying the respiratory system. I don't know much about the respiratory system, but I was kind of looking at this thing, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this stuff, but I'm sitting here, and I'm looking at this diagram of the respiratory system. And I'm like, how cool is that? You have these branches that come off the trachea called bronchii, and then they break into bronchioles or something along those lines, and those are these little stems that are all inside your lungs like a tree. Inside your lungs. And at the tip of those, there's these things called alveoli or something like ravioli. I don't know. But there's these things at the end, and they have ducts in them that, not quack quack, but ducts in them. And they're in there, and they just kind of expand and close, and they allow oxygen and carbon dioxide to kind of go in and out. And so I'm sitting here, and I am watching this thing, and I'm looking at the diagram, and not once am I thinking about the fact that I'm breathing. Not once am I thinking about the fact that this is going on as I'm watching and looking at this diagram. That as I'm looking at this diagram, I have not once said, open up, close, open up, close. Not once have I said, heart, pump, pump, pump. Not once have I done anything. I'm just sitting here and I'm watching and I'm just going, I'm not even thinking about it. I'm going, I got to remember this because I got to try to explain it to my kids. And then I watch an Apple video. I'm like, how cool is that? While at that moment, God is sustaining me. And so he says, you possess my kidneys. The parts of my life, the things of me that I don't understand. I don't have to understand them for you to be at work in them because you do. And somehow in this world where evolution has gained ground, we forget. I'm like, tell me how I'm standing here right now. I'm not telling any of this to happen. It's just happening. Because God is incredible. And we are fearfully and wonderfully made by this God. And so we have to stop sometimes and realize the beauty. And stop getting caught up in the culture around us to the point that we can't step back and go, marvelous, marvelous are your thoughts toward me. Here's the thing. Here's what David is doing when he talks about the thoughts. He's going, if it were me having to tell my body to do all these things, I would have to have constant focus on what's going on in me. If I'm not the one with constant focus on what's going on in me, then who has that constant focus? God. And so even while I sleep, when I wake, you are there. I was sleeping all night. My lungs did not think to stop. They kept going. My mind, my heart, everything was still at work as I slept. Who was making that happen? Because I sure wasn't thinking about it. How great are your thoughts toward me? If I were to count them, they would be like the sand of the sea. I would not be able to count them because you are constantly just thinking about me. And I don't mean that in a prosperity gospel kind of way. What I'm saying is, he is at work in his creation. And David says, this is beautiful. So the first one is recognize the truth. The second one is realize the beauty. And the third one is reject fear. Because here's the deal. And you see it all throughout Scripture. At any moment that an individual becomes truly aware that God is with them, if they have blood pumping in their body, they turn to fear. Because they realize, if God knows me, then he knows everything. And it's what causes the prophets to say things like, I am a man of unclean lips. It's what caused Elijah that when he stood at the mouth of the cave, he had just been running from God himself, Jezebel, and everyone in the Old Testament. And he's standing at the mouth of the cave, and he sees all this activity going around him, and he's just standing there. I mean, he's seeing an earthquake and a fire and all these different things. Then all of a sudden, there's a gentle whisper. And he realizes that that gentle whisper is God and his presence. And the Bible says that he takes his cloak and he throws it over his head. That's what caused Adam and Eve in the very beginning to run and hide. That's what causes David to say, where can I flee from your presence? We always want to hide when we begin to realize. Because here's what happens. Simultaneously, as you realize who God is, you must realize who you aren't. And so here's David, and he's saying, if I try to hide in my darkness, I can't hide. I'm reminded of my son Ben, who's 4. Now, this might be TMI, I don't know, but sometimes I'll have to go check on him in his bathroom, make sure the business has been taken care of. And sometimes I walk in, and in his bathroom, right beside the potty, is right beside his the bathtub. My goodness, my mind just went blank for a second. The bathtub, and it's a shower curtain. And sometimes I'll walk in, and instead of seeing him there on the potty, I see a shower curtain on the potty, and it's like wrapped around into like a funnel going up into the heavens. And I'm looking at this, and I'm like, and I go over, I pick it up, and he's like peeking up under it. And I said, hey, he goes, did you know I was here? Yes. And then he goes, how you know that? I'm like, really? And you know what? That's us in our attempts to hide from God. And I also think about my kids. Every time they get in trouble, they try to hide. Whether they're hiding in the rim of their shirt, or whether they're hiding in the crack of the couch, or whether they're running to their room, they are hiding. Because when you realize who you are, you want to hide. And I want to take an aside. I want to take a break just real quick from Psalm 139. And I want to look at a story. And we're not going to read the story because it would take too long. But it's the story of Jacob in the book of Genesis. And if you want to read this later, I think it's somewhere between Genesis 27 to 32 that this account takes place. I imagine that if Jacob was living today and David was living today and someone said, man, we got to make one of those based on a true story movies on Jacob, that Steven Spielberg would hire David to write the soundtrack for the Jacob movie. And I have this feeling that the soundtrack would have the song Psalm 139 in it. Because what you see in the story of Jacob is a man who has lost authenticity before God. And he is running and running from God and running from family, but ultimately running from himself because he has stopped being real before God. And so here's what happens. You probably know the story. You know that there was Jacob and there was Esau. Esau was slightly older, even though they were twins. And the oldest son in a family gets a blessing. And this blessing is really important. So Jacob, and his name means deceiver, by the way. One who deceives. And so Jacob, once he's older and it's time to receive the blessing, Jacob kind of slides in, dresses up like his brother, and goes into his father. And says to him, I am Esau. And here's what happens in this moment. Esau, Isaac's eyes, his dad, his eyes are bad. And he can't see. He can't hear real well. And he's laying there on his bed and he comes in and he says, who are you? Who is this? And at this moment, Jacob says, I am Esau. There's where the authenticity stops. He still receives the blessing. God is still with him. But he has to leave his home. And he travels and he goes and he lives with his uncle Laban for probably 15 to 20 years. Working there and he's away from home. And here's what's interesting. You see sprinkled out throughout this entire story, God still being with Jacob. But Jacob has not fessed up to who he is. And Jacob is just running from God. He's running from himself. He's running from the truth. And finally, he gets to a place where he says, I've got to do something about this. I've got to face reality. I'm going back to Esau. And he gathers up his family, and he heads back to Esau, back home, finally saying, I've got to be authentic again. I've got to go back to my roots. And on his way, in the dead of night, he has sent his family already across the Jabbok River, and they're already over there, and he is now alone, all by himself. The Bible describes a man that begins to wrestle with him. And as he wrestles with this man, he realizes this is no mere man. And they wrestle throughout the whole night. And Jacob just won't let go. Jacob won't let go, and he continues to wrestle and wrestle and wrestle, and he continues to fight and continues to fight. And finally, the man says, let me go. And Jacob says, not till you bless me. The man knows that what he's wrestling with is his own identity, because that man is God. And he says, what is your name? The last time we heard the question asked, he answered Esau. He says, what is your name? He says, it's Jacob. That's who I am. I'm a deceiver. Everywhere I go, I deceive people. Everywhere I go, I'm fake. The man says, no more. You're now honest and authentic. And you have faced the fear of me. And you've come to me. And now you can be who I've called you to be. And he changes his name to Israel, which means to wrestle before God. And then we see this cool little ending to this story. And this part I do want to read, if we can pull that up. In verse 30, so Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. That word Peniel means the face of God. And so in other words, as the sun rose upon him, here he is. He's still standing. He has faced God. He has faced his greatest fears, and he is still standing. Upon him as he passed Peniel. But something has happened, because as they were fighting, the man touched his hip. What did David say in verse 5? You have laid your hand upon me. You have besieged me. You have trapped me in a way that I can't get out. That's what Jacob is dealing with here. And God himself touched Jacob's hip, knocked it out of socket, as if to say to him, I am letting you go, but I'm the one who won today. But you get to be a part of the victory because you surrendered to me authentically. Limping because of his hip. So here's, I imagine the sun coming up. What did he call the place? The face of God. So he is limping. And I imagine that he had that limp for the rest of his life. His kids and his grandkids and his great-grandkids would say, hey, Pop, why do you limp? He said, that was the day I got real with God. And that was the day he showed me that he still had a plan for me, despite who I am. And that was the day he said, there's a plan for you too. And so to this day, they don't eat of the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. Every single time the Jews will eat of the lamb, they don't eat that part, as if to remind themselves, we walk with a victorious limp, to use Brendan Manning's words, that I am nothing before this great God, but I am able to be with him. That's the place of authenticity. And that's the place that David gets at the end of this chapter. The band can come up, and we're going to close with the last point. So it's recognize the truth, realize the beauty, reject fear, be like Jacob and say, I've got to get real before God, no matter what the consequence might be. And then the last one, number 4, relinquish the heart. That's what Jacob did the day that he fessed up and said, this is who I am. And you know what? God changing his name, and I want to say this real quick, and I want to make sure y'all hear me. In today's world, a lot of times people will say, that's just how I am, deal with it. That's not authenticity. And that is not authenticity before God. Jacob wrestled with God. He said, this is who I am, and God changed who he was. If there is things in your life that aren't right, maybe it's characteristics, maybe it's traits, maybe it's personality stuff, maybe you're just a rude person. You would say, that's just how I am, deal with it. Maybe, I don't know what it is, maybe it's worry or fear. You say, I'm just a fearful person. When David gets before God, when Jacob wrestles, he says, this is who I am, and God does something with that. That is a part of being authentic before God. And so number 4, relinquish the heart. Let's look back and let's read those last 2 verses. You see, it opened with, you have searched me. And now, he says, search me. And not just know me, but know my heart. Know the deep longings of my heart. Know the parts of me that no one else can see. Know the parts of me that I don't even see. Know my heart, oh God. When was the last time you prayed that way? And again, I'm not talking about the Vacation Bible School prayer. I'm talking about where you get before God and you say, kind of like he did up here where he's talking about slaying the wicked. You say, God, here's how I feel. What do you think of it? That's authenticity before God. Search me, oh God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. Know everything. I don't know if Randy Dunson's here. There he is. Randy is into MMA, mixed martial arts. My brother is into mixed martial arts. I went and watched my brother recently, and he was kind of doing some teaching and training. I'm watching these guys. If you know anything about this, they go and they spend like an hour standing in front of another individual and going, hurt me. It's this weird thing in their head. It's like they get up there and it's like, okay, let's do this. I want to get to the place where you're about to break my arm. That's going to be awesome. When was the last time you were like that with God? When was the last time you said, okay, let's do this thing. I'm here, and I want you to know me. I know that you know me, but now I'm asking you to know me. You see the difference? You see the difference? In the beginning, it's, God, you have searched me. Now he's going, oh, I see the level that you know me, and now I want you to dig. It's the same word. I want you to dig into me, and I want you to find the good, and I want you to get rid of the bad, and I want to just lay it all before you, and the stuff that I don't want to tell you, I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to let you deal with it, and I'm going to let you deal with me, and I want you to deal with me. And then when God tells you, hey, don't think that way anymore, we say, okay, help me not to think that way anymore. We don't look at God and say, that's the way I think, deal with it. That's authenticity. Search me and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any grievous way in me. I looked up trying to track down kind of what the Hebrew behind that word grievous is, because it shows up in a lot of different, in different versions. It shows up as different words. It comes from the root word of idol. So in other words, when you look at the history of Israel, you see that more than anything, when the people of Israel would turn to idolatry, when they would turn to idols, it hurt God, it seems, more than anything else. And so what David is saying is, find out where I'm hurting you, God. That's an authentic prayer, people. When was the last time you said, God, show me where I'm hurting you? And I know it's going to hurt me to know it, but I'm here, and I'm not running away in fear this time. I want you to know me that way. And lead me in the way everlasting. You see, he's saying, take the stuff. Do your probing, do your digging, do your excavating, and take out the stuff that shouldn't be there, so that all that's left is what glorifies you. We're going to close. They're going to sing one last song. Usually we tell you to stand. I want to give you the option. I mean, you always have the option, but I want to extend the option. I want us to truly use this next 5 minutes as a response time, as a time to say, God, I'm praying that prayer. Search me. Not vacation Bible school, right answer. But may authenticity be a rhythm of my heart. Let me give you a couple questions to go along with that prayer. Where am I not being real? Where do I need to wrestle? Where is my relationship with other people not consistent with what God knows about me? Where are my desires hurting God? Where do I need to just kind of get in the ring and let God do what only God does? And so we're going to close with this song. It goes perfectly with this passage. And if you're not praying, read the words, sing the words. If you want to stand, stand. Hopefully by the end, we'll all be standing. But I want us to take some time to be real with God. And then we'll close in prayer.